football on Off the Ball.
They can no longer dominate the ball, and the fear factor from City is gone, but they'll still finish second or third.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Hello, NFL fans. It's a bit of a different week this week because we've got the Minnesota Vikings and the Pittsburgh Steelers in Ireland and in Croke Park on Sunday. Just to give you a heads up, myself and Mick are going to be at the game and we'll be doing some post-match. We'll do some updates there. I'm sure there'll be stuff all over our social channels as well. Myself and Mick will be having a great time, so obviously you may as well jump along with us. But before that, today on the podcast, we're going to get into our usual stuff about 15 minutes in, 16 minutes in. But first off, I had the opportunity to interview Max Starks yesterday in Limerick at Munster's training facility. Max Starks was an incredible guest, really great energy, really knowledgeable. Asked him about different Super Bowls, asked him about former players, asked him about the current Steelers. It's a great conversation. Just to warn you ahead of time, though, we had technical issues, so the mics failed on us a little bit as we were going, and it was really windy. Fortunately, we've salvaged most of that, so just if there are any quality issues or audio quality issues, they won't be destroy the whole interview. There'll be a couple of moments where you can't hear me. Thankfully, Max Sarks' audio is all great throughout, so it should be a great listen. So enjoy that, and we'll be back to you right after.
Max Sarks, two-time Super Bowl winning champion with the Pittsburgh Steelers. How are you getting on? How are you finding Ireland?
I'm loving it right now. I love the fact that I have the opportunity to come out here. I've always wanted to come to Ireland. And so to get the opportunity to become Steelers color commentator, and I get to travel in advance of the team and get to see the country is pretty amazing.
So tell me, you said travel in advance of the team. I don't think you've ever done this before a game. Explain to everyone what you're doing right now in Ireland.
So right now what we're doing is we're actually on a terrible towel tour. And so
right there,
yeah, as we see, we've been passing out terrible towels. We've been going all around Ireland. And, you know, just trying to spread, of course, in advance of the Steelers getting here, just goodwill and also one of our most cherished traditions, which is to tear off its own. And so we've been to Kilkenny. We've been to Killarney. We're here now in Limerick, headed up to Galway. We're going up along that western coast, and then we're going to do a Belfast and have a football camp. And then get back to Dublin for the tailgates for 3 days and then do a game.
So, thankfully, you're used to traveling, and I hope they've got a big bus for you. Yeah. I mean, we don't have many people over here like you. But like,
yeah. Well, they did a great job. I mean, they brought this big bus out here. And you know, it's been just a great experience because, like, just driving out and seeing the scenery. Like, in America, things are a little bit more congested and everything. And you think this is a small island, but just the vast beauty that's here.
You drive down some roads and it all opens up in front of you.
And just see, like, all the I'm a big architecture.
Oh, really? Well.
So looking at all, like, the old architecture that's here and buildings have been around for centuries. And you're talking about things that date back, like, to the 12th century, 10th century, and before that. Like, just the deep, rich history of Ireland has been something I've been...
Have you seen some castles yet?
So I went to Kilkenny yesterday.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful castle. I mean, and just the way that it opens up. Because you see it from the side of the street, and you're like... This is nice.
And then the grounds.
You walk the grounds, and I love the horseshoe with the big, like, rolling hills that's off in the distance. Just beautiful. So I've had a chance to see a couple. I was hoping maybe see St. John's here. Obviously, that's a Norman castle construction. So, I'm really excited.
Well, there's some sites down here right now because where we are. You mentioned we're in Limerick, but you were just in with the Munster rugby players. Now, if I walked into that room, I'd be like, oh, my God, look how big all these people are. I'm guessing you're one of the very few people in the world who've walked into that room, and everyone in there has gone, oh, my God, look how big he is. How was that for you?
It was amazing, you know, because you see rugby on television. You get an idea, like, man, these dudes are big as us. And then you walk in there.
Yeah, they're not. They're kind of small.
And I'm like, a little bit slimmer. But the height of a lot of those guys. I mean, you have guys that were in there 6'7", 6'8", just like me. And then you have, like, the little guys, but they're, like, solid. They're like pit bulls. Yeah. So it was cool to see. And the guys were really welcoming. And, you know, it taught me a little bit on the pitch, just how to pass.
Could you throw the ball?
I did. I was left-handed, so it was easier to toss.
Than American football because it's a little more space to grab.
Like, right? Yeah, it's bigger, and you're using both those hands. Whereas American, they want you to use one hand. And then there's laces that you have to try and hit.
Yeah.
This is just all the way around. So as long as you get the grip, it'll be pretty good.
Well, that brings me to an interesting point. Like, in your career, how many times did you touch the ball? I have a theory here that you've touched more Super Bowl trophies than footballs.
Yeah, you know what? The only time I've touched it has been in fumble recovery situations. And usually that's just like smothering the ball versus actually carrying. I carried the ball once in college.
Oh, well.
It was only because my quarterback actually messed up. And he threw the ball backwards, and all the receivers were downfield. So it was a bunch of offensive linemen with the ball. So I just picked.
How many yards did you get?
2 yards.
Oh,
okay. Two positive yards.
2 yards is pretty good. Running backs do three, so you're good to do. That's all right.
And it was this, I led the team in rushing that game. That's a true stat.
I led the team in rushing for one game in college. That is not something his college wants you to say.
They don't want me to say this, but I'm going to say it because, hey, that's a big man's dream right there.
Well, we mentioned your career, and like for me, and like I'm a big Munster fan, I've been much supported of Robocorp, but like Rob as well, Stevens fan. And I remember 2004. You joined in 2004, right?
Yeah, that was my first year drafted. Yeah.
Okay. So
second year we won the Super Bowl.
Sorry. So you were there for the year before with Jerome in the AFC Championship. Do you remember that locker room water play?
Gosh, you talk about just a deflating feeling, right? Because that season to go 15-1, but back when it was still 16 games, and to get down to championship with a quarterback in Ben Roethlisberger, my classmate, and you played. You played the New England earlier that year. You broke their winning streak. Tom Brady as well. And then to come back and have that type of game. We won't talk about the allegations around that game afterwards, but that's it. That was just a big gut punch for the team. So, and for Jerome to decide to come back, he wanted to retire at that point. A lot of my teammates were able to talk him back and coming back for one more year. And who would have known that one year would have been their hometown to?
Yeah. Now, you know, you're going to compare and contrast that. So you've got the worst of the worst at the end of that season.
Yeah.
And then, like, literal fairy tale. I had Alan Faneca on at Port Super Bowl last year, and we were talking about Willie Parker rolling the ultimate Synchronia home touchdown pass.
Yeah.
And his recollection of it was, I hit a guy and my face is in the ground. So he couldn't remember much of it.
Yeah.
So what do you remember from the Super Bowl that year?
So what was awesome was, on that play, it was counter 34 Pike is actually the name of the play.
Wow, he remembers the play.
So I was on the right side. So myself, Kendall Simmons, Heath Miller's rookie, tight end, we have a double team up to the right side backer. Allen's pulling around. He's kicking out the end. And then Heath is also staying on the defensive end. So you have two guys working the outside. We're working to that back to that linebacker. Just remember before the play, you saw the rotation. Went to double team. I smashed my guy. Kendall then smothered him, and I went up, and the guy who I blocked, Lofa Tatupu.
I'm about to learn that. All pro linebacker.
Yes, all pro linebacker, and I ended up sealing him, getting him on the edge, and that was the last block. And next thing I know, I feel this wind behind my butt, and I realized it wasn't me. And next thing you know, 70 plus yards, still the longest touchdown rush in Super Bowl history.
Union American football does that place see the 100 million pounds. Yeah. No one has ever known any of this. But one play that everyone knows about, and again, like you had such a career being a sealer. Like another play, like that play was huge right now.
Yeah.
And then I can't play. But it's not even like top one player, but you were on the field, right? I assume you were on the field for St. Tony Hall corner, right?
I was, yes.
But so I want to ask you about that. But before we get to that, my big issue with that play, no, not any particular, everyone forgets how good the body use was on that try. He made sure your board players that kept you always alive, kept going. And then you get that play at the end. That whole driveway, it must have been a blur at the time, but now looking back now.
I mean, when I look back, he had five catches on their driver lines to get us down the field and make that play. And a lot of people don't realize, like, in that driveway sequence, the play before the one that Mark, he ran the same exact play to the left.
Oh, no.
And Ben sailed it a little bit too high, and Santonio jumped a little bit too soon. So we literally came back down, and he's like, all right, we're in the same play. We're just going to do it to the right. And I'm going to do it to the left. And that's how we ran it. So I was on the backside as a left tackle. That. So for Willie's, I was a right tackle.
Yeah.
For this Super Bowl 43, I'm the left tackle. So I'm blocking a defensive end. We lock up. He's trying to get the edge. And then all of a sudden, you just hear this roar come over the entire stadium. And you're just like, and in my head, I'm like, I hope this is a good one. And I turn, and everybody's running towards Santonio to celebrate. I run to Ben. I pick him up. And I'm like, we used to do that type of celebration where he'd run, jump, I catch him, whip him up in the air. And so I go to do that. I'm like, okay. And then I start to run off the field. And I realize, oh, shoot, I got to do the try. I got to do the extra point. So I jog back on the field to get in place. But watching the replay on the screen as we're getting ready to do the extra point, because they had to confer that he was actually in bounds. So you watch, man, hey, he was a blank there. I was like, Toad, I was like, it was pretty special. So having those type of moments, like both of those Super Bowls, having that signature play will always stick with me in my entire career. And, like, it bonds us forever. When you do something like that, you're bonded with those guys, and you create a special brotherhood that's so special.
So you seem to have a great recall. Like, I remember play calls a lot. So I got to ask you very quickly about three players played with. But because you're an offensive lineman, I want to ask about the guys you were dealing with on the other side and watching our head.
Yes.
And these are three very, very notable names. Well, notable names to Steelers fans at the very least. First one, James Harrison, what's your memory?
Oh, okay.
James, the most fierce competitor I've ever played. Like, practice with him made the game so much easier on Celtics. Because I was going against this guy, and he was actually picked up finally in the league the same year that I was drafted to the Steelers. So we started our NFL
career.
He was cut four. And two times by the Steelers, two times by the Ravens. And he went to the NFL Europe, played a number of years at Frankfurt. And finally in 2001 was his opportunity. And that was the year that he came, and I was a rookie. So we had parallel journeys along that. And then, of course, when Joey Porter in the Cleveland game, like him and William Reed got to the fight with Bjork, that was his first game where he got a start at outside backer. Rest is history. I mean, he's just tremendous, fierce competitor, super strong. You know, IW is home, the bully. Yeah, he had a nickname. Yeah, and that's how he got his name, Debo.
Yeah.
You know, from the movie Friday. So that's how it is. But I love him as a team.
This is the difficulty with AQ and Fear. Like, I mentioned James Harrison, and we have you talked to touching the play ball back, but we don't have time for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. So yeah. Two triple Amalu.
The hair. I mean, I knew Troy as he was a freshman at USC. That was the first time meeting them. I was on my official visit. And all those years later, he married my good friend, Sisker. And so, Troy, when you think about just the quietest.
Scariest
dude, because he was so quiet. Because here's the thing. He would run at you, you'd see the hair, and he would tattoo you and knock you out. And then you go, God bless you, brother. And then walk off and just sit there and just wait. And then he'd come on the sideline, and he's doing the prayer. Then you're like, don't talk to him right now. I'm like, he's crying. I'm like, this is scary. I was like, you just knocked a guy out on the field. Now he's just sitting there like nothing happened. So, but the most genuine human thing ever.
He was bizarre. He's never told me on y'all.
No. I mean, no.
Honestly, I tell him all the time, like, Troy.
You know, they work for the
like, I would have closed the line. He's like,
people try. He's like, you wouldn't have seen Cam Max.
He's in it. Just such a soft voice. And it would tear you by love.
So, final one from the guy. This one might be a little less known than the first one.
Yeah.
But I'm paying. That's a Steelers final on its head. But Steelers passed up. Shots.
The most underrated defensive player I ever had.
Sure.
Aaron Smith was the heartbeat of our defense. You think about all the success that we had in those early 2000s. That guy, Aaron Smith, was central cheers while we were successful. One of the best defensive pitch for receiving lanes, first technique, the ability to play any other off defense. He would be an all pro. He would have been a Hall of Famer. He would have had 20 sacks a season. Like, he would have been J.J. Watt before J.J. Watt. That's how good he was. Such a selfless individual that he played the technique, forced all the pro to the linebackers, and he's one of our most beloved teammates. You're absolutely right. It's not a known name, but to Mustin Lee with him, he was one of our MVP.
Yeah, just went again, talk about the way he sees it. So on the next level, right? So, but you mentioned yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
How would Max Arctic prime gone against?
Oh man. We would have some battles because TJ has a skill set. He reminds me a lot of Terrell Suggs.
Oh yeah.
As far as the skill set. Yeah, another bully type. And he's just relentless in his effort. So he gives you like Terrell Suggs, Mr. Clay Matthews type of skill set. So I would have definitely pulled some tricks on it. I would have had a couple of tricks for him, but it would have been a good battle. I mean, he probably would have gotten me a number of times, but you know, the game is a defense player just has to hit two or three at ball. And that's a great game. And for me, if I give a one, I'm a bum. So technically, he would have had a better game, but I would have had more of those successes.
Playing Mark a bit off, you see.
Yeah, exactly.
That brings us to the team currently.
I feel pretty good. After watching the New England game and seeing the fact that they've gotten off to one of the best starts for a game. I mean, three straight weeks, we scored on OP drives. We didn't do this since 2022. Yeah. So just to put that in perspective. But I think when you have a guy like Aaron that's still getting used to all the teammates, his ability to spread the ball around doesn't allow Pajitas to really key in. I think one of the things, because we have such a young offensive line, that run game still hasn't quite gotten there yet. But I feel really good about the way that they've kind of matured from week one to now. And I feel like this week, if we saw the defense last week, just absolutely going to tear. Live turnovers and five sacks created havoc. The Cam Hayward play where he tips it, Brandon Ackles gets the interception, forced fumbles. And those are the things I think. Now the defense has caught it. Now it's the offense's turn. I feel like this week,
round to pick it up,
coming over here.
Difficult defense,
he was a coach here for us 10 years ago, so he knows a lot of the personnel. And I think that's what makes it tough. But with the Vikings not having J.J. McCarthy, not having Aaron Jones, that offense is going to look a little stagnant. So I think it will be a defensive tilt But I feel like the advantage goes to the Steelers in that. So I'm really good about Sunday.
So a final one with Ben Stefan, and just because I know he coached you for Illinois, he came in with Bill Cowher initially.
Yes.
How happy do you have to, like, when you look around the NFL, you see all these coaches turning over 3 years. How happy do you have to be with Bill Cowher? Just that I was over at Steelers training camp before the season.
Yeah.
And you know, he has that booming voice and press conference and stuff.
Yes.
And you hear him when he's like not in front of the media. It's the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I heard him from the other side of the field. Like, oh my God. Doing all these efforts and everything, but how happy are you?
I'm so excited. I mean, to see his start and play, and I played 6 years for him, his first 6 years as a head coach, and now going into year 19, just the longevity of that, right? I mean, I've been retired for a number of years. I've come back, and now I'm working in a different capacity for the team, and he's still here. And I think that just goes to speak to the Steelers organization and that consistency to identify talent at such a young age, but allow the talent to grow and mature to the guy that we see today. I think so many teams are so used to moving quick and just moving on. They want the quick fix. And this is why the Steelers have only had three coaches since 1969. And the first two Hall of Famers, he'll be a Hall of Famer as well.
Yeah, he's already wrapped it up. So whenever he decides to go take TV and get paid tens of millions of dollars, give his opinion.
Don't think he's that good. He'll be like, he'll be there with 80.
Yeah, he's like, nah, I think I'm going to go back.
Max, so, thank you very much.
It's my pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks.
I bet you didn't think you'd get an answer.
No, I did not. I was like,
I could have gone Chris Kimmel after. He's been Redmond.
I could have gone anywhere.
Yeah, Gary Russell. Yeah, there you go. G. Russ actually in the playoffs was the best running back we had in 43. It wasn't.
Yeah,
he was short yardage finish.
Yeah, yes, he had four touchdowns.
We always loved that the Steelers never went through that. Well, except for Willie, but Willie was over half.
Yeah.
So, by the way, we're finished here. We're just talking. So if you want to take him away.
Max, can I just steal your towel?
That's all I need. But like, I remember
Hanging out with celebrities. Max Starks, what a name, first off.
What a player as well. We were saying this previously, that these two teams are taking this really seriously. They're sending us the big guns, that we're not just getting the punter kicker. I can't be saying punter kicker anymore. Slating punters and kickers too much lately.
Especially because all of them are about to be Irish. And we'll be very glad to get some punters and kickers on the show. Tell us about Max Starks then, for people who don't know.
Yeah, so the interview there we just played out. Obviously, you got a lot from that interview, and he was really good. And his recall in particular was amazing. I said to him in the interview, like, do you remember this play from the Super Bowl? And he goes, oh yeah, he listed off the play call and was saying exactly what it was. And I talked to him about the Santonio Holmes play, and he talked about flipping it over. But what was amazing to me, and this now really kind of is why I understand why they chose him as their media guy, like he does their podcast every week, that interview finishes and we cut the camera off and we got the mic off, and he kept talking to me just about Steelers running backs for 10 minutes.
Right.
Like, we were there in the weeds of Isaac Redman, Jonathan Dwyer, these guys who are like played five times for the Steelers, and the passion from him was just incredible. And he was just this really friendly, really nice guy. And he mentioned in the thing as well, he loves architecture, so he's here doing a tour of Ireland, and he's going to like every single tour spot, but also like every single castle he can get to before the game. So really, really fascinating guy, really interesting guy, really great to talk to.
Okay, the Terrible Tell Tour, he's the one doing the tour of the country, and if anybody wants to find out about that,
Steelers Ireland, and actually the Steelers main account as well are sharing everything as well. So again, going out to a gigantic audience.
He was an offensive tackle.
Yes, so he's 6'8" and 155 kg in his
What's
prime.
What's his arm wingspan?
God only knows.
That's all I've been hearing about all year.
Well,
in Will Campbell land.
I shook his hand yesterday and my hand disappeared into his, and then Rachel, who works here as well, shook his hand, and I'm pretty sure her hand was like his two small fingers.
I just shook Donegh O'Callaghan's hand a minute ago and it's honestly still sore.
What a name drop.
He's just outside.
But no, he is an absolute giant. He's actually, sorry, where we were in, we were at the Munster training complex down in UL. And he had walked into the Munster gym and they're all doing their lifting, all that kind of stuff. And I was kind of thinking, most people walk in there and you're looking up going, oh my God, these guys are massive. He was walking in looking down on everyone. And they put up a great picture of him next to Craig Casey as well. Craig Casey's standing on a table and he's still not as tall as him.
Was he a left tackle?
He was a left tackle. So he was interesting because he came into the league the same year as Ben Roethlisberger, but he had to play right tackle initially because they had, I think, Jeff Harting's at left tackle, and he was a veteran. So as a rookie,
he reached the Super Bowl in his first season,
second season.
Okay,
because he came in for the Jerome Bettis when they lost in the AFC Championship, and Jerome was going to retire, and then he came back to the hometown Super Bowl in Detroit, and Max was playing right tackle for that.
Right.
Then the Super Bowl in Arizona, he's playing left tackle when Santonio Holmes catches that ball.
Okay.
And I was saying this to him, it's ridiculous when you're talking to Steelers, because I was like, oh, this amazing player you're involved in, and Aaron's like, we didn't even mention James Harrison running the ball back for the interception. They just have so many iconic plays from the last 20 years.
So he would have been the period just as everybody realised the left tackle is like the most important player. If you have a quarterback.
Oh, he would have got paid well,
with a right hand.
Yeah.
The Jason Peters of the world.
Very good. All right. So, look, the level of excitement, I think, has ratcheted up for the game. The people are in town. The shops are open. The NFL have their own shop in the Oasis store.
It's in there last night.
In the Oasis store.
Even more expensive than the Oasis store.
Yes. But it's actually really cool. We were in there last night and you were spent a good hour inside there. They have these GAA jerseys that are built in the NFL style, but there's only 50 of them. Because they've made like proper jumper kind of things. They look really cool. Look out for them on our socials today because we have a full video.
What do you mean, sorry, GAA jerseys?
So they're actual proper GAA jerseys with like a Steelers crest and then Steelers in Irish on, as the sponsor. But there's two levels of them. There's like a soccer style quality of one and then there's like one that almost looks like it's knitted.
Right.
It's from some Belfast designer who has done them and they're really cool. You'll see them, they'll stand out because you definitely notice like they're obviously there's not many GAA NFL jerseys. You know?
And how much were they?
Too much for me to afford anyway, I can tell you that.
Different counties, obviously.
I think
Dublin and Cork.
No, they've got it's the other way around. So it's the GAA format, but it's the 32. So they've 32 and then they've 50 of each to sell. So there's only that many in total.
All right, very good. Who's the most famous person we're expecting at the game?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I mean, obviously, Aaron Rodgers.
Well, the most famous one I've heard on the Steelers side or player side is Jerome Bettis coming over, but I imagine, I mean, is Roger Goodell coming?
He is, yeah. He's playing Whelans.
He's playing Whelans.
He's covering Oasis.
Little harmonica.
Actually, I'm not sure.
The Goodell 5.
I imagine you'll get a lot of people. The thing is, like, soccer players are playing Premier League and stuff, so they won't be over.
Greg Olsen is in the commentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
And the Steelers, I think, are staying in the Shelburne.
Vikings are in Shelburne, I think.
Vikings are the Shelburne and the Steelers are out in Carton.
Yeah. And they're Abbotstone training, I think. Yeah. They arrive. That's the weird thing as well. They arrive on Friday at 7:30 in the morning and their first practice is 2:00 that day.
Yeah, I suppose the last sleep tablets into you. And,
yeah, and they're over on the first class airlines and they're able to sort out their body.
The Vikings have got
a charter
plane that one of the plane spotters on Twitter was like, oh, this plane never arrives here. It's coming straight from Minneapolis. It must be the...
Although walking around town, like it's even just seeing the amount of people around and it's only Wednesday and there's like I was walking back from our other building over the road there and I'd walk past four or five people wearing Vikings jerseys and Steelers gear.
But this is the thing, Dublin is really small, like, and in many ways so much like think of Six Nations weekends when there might be 15,000 from France or from Scotland. They're the ones that you can always see because it's either berets or kilts. And
England travel in big numbers, yeah.
Yeah, but again, not as obviously. So you kind of see every French supporter wearing the beret, every Scottish person wearing a kilt, and it takes over the city centre. And that's only 15,000 or whatever. We are talking about, from what I'm hearing, it looks like 2/3 of the stadium is going to be from outside of Ireland.
I think more even.
What the NFL are saying is it looking like 2/3, as in it's going to be 1/3 from America, from the cities, and then more from UK and Europe who are coming in, who bought tickets just to go to the game in the way we would go to London.
It has worked out, with the exception obviously of JJ McCarthy, who I think there's still an outside chance. Is he travelling?
I'm not sure, I haven't actually checked yet.
Right, but Carson Wentz looked pretty good last week.
Yeah.
So like they're in good stead.
Yeah.
Obviously, I guess the Steelers wish they had a younger quarterback, but your man looks all right.
Yeah.
It looks fine, yeah. Well, they should have, like, they the Patriots had 5 turnovers against them last week. Like, it was an insane game that, if you're just looking at it from a Steelers point of view and a Rodgers point of view, that first 15 plays, you know, would you almost think it was like that's more for a guy who isn't as in tune with everything as he would be, and maybe a rookie or a young quarterback. But the Steelers seem to go out with a plan that's good and then fall to nothing. I think they had 100 yards of offense in the second half. And they weren't always defending the lead because that was a tie game for most of the third and fourth quarter. So I don't know. There's something not clicking there fully. Like,
that is the concern. The past 2 weeks now, they've been great in the first half and then terrible in the second half. And I assume you were watching the Patriots game last week.
Yeah.
Like when Rodgers threw that ball straight to the linebacker, like that's a gift you don't expect to ever get. And that happened immediately at the start of the third quarter. And the issue there is they blitz from one side and Rodgers looks left and he comes to the middle, which is kind of a cardinal sin for a quarterback that you don't expect a quarterback of his level and experience to do, because he knows that the linebacker is there. Even if he's looking left to right, he never actually sees him. So that's the kind of mistake that seems to be sneaking into Rodgers' game in the second half of games. I do wonder, no, it's the easy thing. Is it a matter of, oh, he's older, so after two quarters of taking hits, two quarters of throwing the ball, maybe he just starts to wear down in the second half. But that I'm always wary of going with the very simple and obvious solution.
Well, sometimes it's right, but sometimes as well, it is very early in his recovery from horrific Achilles injury last season. So like
at his age.
Yeah.
Well, it was the year before. But
the year before, yeah. So he's probably in that, it should be just about getting better now, but maybe in terms of wearing down, that makes sense. Your point, though, about the two teams being in good shape is exactly right. We're, you know, when the... First of all, when we had a game with no teams, we were like, we have the Steelers. Who knows what they're going to be like? We don't know their quarterback situation. They can't keep cobbling together teams forever and being relevant. So we don't know what they're going to be like. Plus, we don't know who they're going to be playing. Then it's the Vikings. They're like, oh, good. Okay, well, the Vikings are going to be decent. Their quarterback goes down. They win by 40 points. Both teams are genuine playoff contenders. It's week four. It could easily have been a New Orleans Saints or a Tennessee Titans or someone like that.
Or the Jags and the Browns. Like, you know.
Yeah, well, the Browns beat the Packers.
Well, we'll talk about that game in a while. It was a crazy game.
But look, yeah, we have a game that is relevant. I was going to say nationally relevant, internationally relevant, which is, I suppose, all we can ask for, really.
Yeah.
Can we talk about that, actually, the game last week with the Bengals? Because, like, the Vikings blew them out and at 41-3, I think it was in the end, or 41-10, whatever it was. But it was 34-3 at halftime. And a lot of this came from Carson Wentz played fine. He was perfectly capable as a backup quarterback, but a lot of it came from the Bengals just being horrendous. Like, they were turning the ball over constantly and their linebackers can't move. So while we look at last week and we're like, oh, they had a 41-3 win, and Isaiah Rodgers actually played like prime Charles Tillman. He was just knocking the ball out constantly and getting interceptions. He scored two touchdowns, which is amazing for a cornerback. But while they had all that, and then you look at the Steelers and you're like, oh, that was a struggle against the Patriots. It was like kind of an arm wrestle of a game. Oh, we must assume the Vikings so will be the better team here. I think it's a really not the case. I actually think it's a perfectly balanced game. This is a game I wouldn't be going in confident that either side is going to win.
That's interesting.
Because the Steelers have the speed in the back seven that the Vikings were able to take advantage of last week, that they won't be able to take advantage of this week with Wentz if Wentz is starting. And you also are missing Aaron Jones there now. Well, name escapes
Jordan
right now.
Mason.
Jordan Mason looked really good last week. Again, that comes back to how bad that Bengals defense was, I think. Steelers are going to front up. TJ Watt was doing crazy things again last week. He will continue to do that. And he'll definitely be able to get more pressure on them. The other side of that is, we talked about the Steelers there. They have, they're a frustrating team, and it's been this way with Tomlin for a while. Like, I felt like watching them last week, they were actually doing really well on offense. And then you look at the numbers, just for whatever reason, like Jalen Warren was making people miss all the time, and he finished the game with 2.6 yards per carry, and you're kind of going, how did that happen? So I do think defensively, and Brian Flores is the defensive coordinator of the Vikings now, previously with the Steelers, he'll know a lot of their guys, a lot of their tendencies and how to attack them. So I could see this being a game where you have a lot of big mistakes on both sides and a lot of big plays on both sides, which will make it an exciting game. And it also should, in theory, keep it competitive the whole way through.
How does an international game affect the game, do you think? Like, so regardless of travel and everything like that, there's obviously a crowd that will react differently than they would in, and I've been to Wembley games and so on, and I know that it doesn't feel the same. It's like we don't have our cues and everything just sounds a little bit different, and that's a huge part of the NFL, is the quiet on third down for the home team and so on, make noise on third down against the road team.
Will they do that for both sides, do you think?
I'm just curious as to how much it affects.
Well, not more Steelers come than it's just as easy to fly from Minneapolis as
exactly.
It is.
So I'm just curious how it affects.
Oh, sorry,
the,
I thought you were saying how would the teams manage it, because the teams have so much experience at this stage. Like, I was reading about this previously, and it's so long ago now. After the first couple of them, they were doing studies on like what's the best time to travel across, what's the best way for them to travel. So like when I mentioned there, they're getting off the plane and going straight to practice. 2 o'clock here is their practice. That's 9 a.m. for the Steelers. I don't know if Minnesota's in that, but it'd be early morning for them in that time zone. So they obviously have thought through, okay, get them asleep on the plane, get them straight to practice.
Yeah,
they're immediately adjusted.
Oh, I think they're good at that stuff. I kind of literally just mean like noise in the stadium, different environment. They wouldn't be used to like maybe the open end versus everything
smaller
else.
Lockers.
Absolutely. Very, very different setup in the locker rooms and so on. And then like as good as the Crow Park pitch is, like a cutter upable soft grass pitch.
Yeah.
You know, there's loads of things that are going to be there. Also, a much bigger field. So there's going to be even just, you know, you talk about like the kickers and so on and how they're going to be judging things with depth perception now. Like, it's a much bigger field than they'll need. So, yeah, the whole thing is just, I'm just fascinated as to how players... our teams, I suppose, react in that circumstance.
I'm a noted cynic for these things at this stage since I've been covering it for so long, but I'm actually genuinely, like, the excitement's building for me as well. I'm actually really looking forward to it. I mean, it's not even like, and the game's very good, but the prospect of like watching it in Croke Park and seeing the pictures that come from it and the video that comes through it and the pageantry around it and stuff, it's really like, I'm buying in now.
Yeah,
I'm fully buying in.
The American media is very excited about it. The over is 40.5,
which is quite low.
Yeah, so expect this to be an arm wrestle.
Defensive.
17-15.
I think. I'm not giving gambling recommendations here, but I'm thinking it'll be a little bit more than that. Although I don't know what the weather is. It's the weather.
Literally just looking up there. it's dry every day between now and this day next week, except on Sunday.
Well, there you go. Kickers will matter now on Sunday.
Precipitation. it's all right. It actually could be dry between 10 a.m. and 4-ish. It's relatively dry. Light rain.
They'll manage. One of them's coming from Minnesota, one of them's coming from Pittsburgh.
What time is kickoff?
2:30.
Half two.
Yeah.
Half two?
Yeah.
It's random, isn't it?
Well, it's they wanted a 3.5 hour window.
To lead into the other games.
Right.
Yeah, because it's just overtime.
Did the London games always start on the hour?
They haven't always done this.
They're trying to do it as late in the day as possible as well. Because of obviously
they want everybody to get pissed beforehand.
I basically know from American podcasts talking about how early they have to get up in the morning that the games generally start at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific.
6:30. Yeah. Sorry, I thought it was 6. Fair enough. Okay, so what you're saying, too close to call, it's going to come down to a mistake by one of the quarterbacks, both of whom you've been dumping on for about a decade.
Rodgers about 3 or 4 years. But yeah, I think Rodgers won't make as many mistakes as Wentz. But I do think the Vikings are probably a better team, maybe. I don't know. You gave me a look there as if that was crazy.
No, I don't know. I think they probably are overall, but they don't have their quarterback, so.
Yeah.
The McCarthy, it wasn't whether or not he's going to be fit to start. They're now beginning to think that there might be some kind of controversy there.
Oh, no. No way. McCarthy's played 3 games. Like, we're not going to do it. I know the Colts are going well at the moment, but they can't treat their young quarterback the same way the Colts did with Anthony Richardson, especially when he hasn't done a whole lot wrong so far.
Richardson played a lot more.
The big thing with Wentz last week, look, he was fine, but like, if you actually go back and watch it, the field position in the game was constantly in their favour. Yeah. They had a drive where they gained 20 yards and got 3 points. And you're like, that kind of thing kept happening, so they're just sacking up numbers.
I think what you do is you wait until McCarthy is totally fit, so you're not throwing him out there, because Wentz is very passable at this stage.
Yeah, it's Carson Wentz. Like, he has it in his locker, but he's not going to do it all the time. Yeah. Like, so they need to make sure they're at least trying to get the most out of McCarthy.
Speaking of...
Well... What? No, I just want to, are we going to move off?
Okay, if you're not, I was going
to
move off. So
no, I wanted to, before we move off, I think this is the biggest, like, I've been, I watched the NFL on the Monday nights in the 80s when I was a kid and so on, but I've been a proper NFL fan since the 01 Super Bowl 2000, where I randomly picked the Patriots because they were underdogs, and then that worked out well, right? So, like, this is a big, big deal for American football fans in this country, and I think that's exciting, and regardless of all the kind of ins and outs we can talk about, I think there is something incredibly cool about this on Sunday. And then I also want to know, I have to go press box, so I have to wear normal clothes, but do you wear
your jersey?
Yeah, because this is, like, they do it at Wembley and stuff like that, but and I've done it at Wembley. I've worn my Patriots when they haven't been playing.
Are we going to play that game where we go and you try and pick out all 32 jerseys? Because I'm going to bet against that happening. I think there's going to be so many Vikings and Steelers fans here, you won't get that same that you got in Wembley.
Well, there is. The NFL are saying...
That'd be mad if that did happen, because that'd be the first time it's happened, right?
Yeah, the NFL are saying there is a lot more interest in tickets from America than there has been for any other international game.
It's the Steelers. I don't know if it's all the Steelers, but a big chunk of that would be the Steelers. They travel so well.
It was weird to me that Kansas came out so early in this whole thing and were like, we're next. That was like a...
So we're one of their...
There's 16 teams.
We're one of their countries, aren't we? Yeah.
Not to be overly cynical in business.
Exploit
about that
is the
process.
Word they have in it.
Not to be overly cynical in the thought process of it, but we were talking to the Fanatic CEO yesterday in the NFL shop, and he was saying to us that Ireland, not per head, Ireland has the fourth most jersey sales for NFL. Not per head.
Okay.
So per head, because we'd be
number one.
We'd be miles ahead because it's Germany, France.
Why are we like that? We're like that for everything. Like concerts, there's...
Maybe because we're like a good time. We'll pay anything.
We're so outward looking, maybe, and we're just like,
I don't know. I think probably because we something we else. Do like loads of people have connections with teams in the States.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like I randomly picked a team. It's
although like, Mick literally just said he did.
I know, but like I guess you now subsequently have found loads of people and J1s and all that kind of stuff where you get the opportunity to activate your relationship.
Yeah,
in a way that I don't know. I don't know. I mean, these are obviously pop culture theories here, but like whether or not, like bring the teams for a second game, sell more jerseys, fine, but that's not like the Kansas City Chiefs coming next year would be Mahomes and Kelsey and maybe Kelsey's wife for the game next year.
I heard a terrible rumor that he's going to change the name on the back of his jersey when he gets married because he gets 5% of his jersey sales. Because imagine if you put Swift on the back of his jersey, imagine how many of them would sell.
You get 5%.
Apparently so.
Is that okay?
I mean, if you sell 10 million of them at 150 euro,
I think it's like a very modern thing for him to do. Like, cash in. Everybody else cashing in.
You may as well.
Like, what's
the most NFL thing?
The Bears
ever.
Already have a jersey with Swift on the back. Do people
no, DeAndre. It's awful.
Right, Dad. You go next.
I don't have the running order.
Where do you want? Okay.
I won't wear my Patriots jersey.
Well, we were talking about Carson Wentz possibly replacing JJ McCarthy, but instead we have Jackson Dart replacing Russell Wilson in New York. Which is absolutely, we talked about Russell Wilson, I think last week we were saying he needs to be more aggressive because he's definitely getting benched soon, and then he had a bit of a nightmare at the weekend. Look, very quickly on this, Jackson Dart, I thought he was raw in college, he was Ole Miss, I think, a guy who, much better athletic profile than Wilson at this stage of his career, probably somewhat similar to Wilson when he was coming out, but obviously not 15 years later, 10, 12 years later. He's got a big arm, he will make plays with his legs, he'll be very more structured. Brian Daboll will condense the offense down because one of the knocks on Jackson Dart coming out of college was he essentially ran like 6 plays and he didn't know how to do anything else. So hopefully that will actually invigorate the offense because you've got Malik Nabers there, Darius Slayton still looks like he's 22 even though he's approaching 30. So it'll be a lot more fun of a Giants team and a Giants offense, but whether it'll be much better, I don't know. But I'd much rather have the rookie in at this stage.
Yeah, why not? Where are you going at 0-3 with Russell Wilson? You may as well see what you have for the rest of the season and then see from there. Did you hear the Eli Manning story about Jackson Dart? So he was on American TV and he said that when he got drafted, he contacted him and he said, look, this is a tough gig. You know, it's like, look, if you need anything, just give me a call. I'm happy to talk to you at any point. You know, just give me a call. Jackson Dart said, yeah, absolutely. Thanks a million. Rings him a couple of months later and he's like, hey, can I talk? Yeah. What do you need, man? He's like, can you get me a reservation at this exclusive restaurant in New York? And Eli's like, that's not what I meant. No, you have to earn that reservation. Call me back when you need quarterback advice.
Did he have to tell a story?
So that's the Jackson Dart.
It's hard to get into these places.
I mean, it's not when you're the quarterback of the New York Giants.
It is. You know? He was trying.
You get Russell Wilson to make the...
You need a couple of Super Bowls in your locker before you can get into that restaurant.
That does not suggest somebody who is going to deal well with the bright lights, big city pressures that comes from being the New York Giants starting quarterback.
Not a great initial story, I would say.
Yeah. Naive.
0-6, the New York teams.
Actually, speaking of, can I ask you, I found this interesting this week. There was a clip of Joe Burrow, and he was talking about being a leader and how he doesn't ever shout at anyone or give out to anyone. And his explanation was, when I make a mistake, I know I've made a mistake. I don't want anyone to shout at me or give out to me. And it just felt so against what you see in the NFL, like Brady screaming at people like on the sideline, Gray shouting at people on the sideline. And I was half wondering, is this a generational thing or is this just a Joe Burrow thing? But I wonder, can that be effective? And does it kind of, obviously Joe Burrow being injured is the biggest issue the Bengals have had, but they've also had a kind of identity lacking in recent times, I would say, as well.
I don't know. I mean, the one season he was fully fit, they reached the Super Bowl and probably should have won, right? Like, I think you've got to take what he says on board and listen to it. You definitely need to go through it and think that there are some players who sometimes don't fully appreciate the fact that this is the one moment that they're going to have in their career where something magical could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't rise to that occasion or they don't notice that that occasion is happening or passing them by. I don't know how you tell those people that sometimes they need a kick in the hole and sometimes they need a... over here are all the wealth that you've ever dreamt of.
Well, that's what I was thinking. You need a balance. You can't just take that one approach the whole time, right?
It depends on who it is, isn't it?
But if you're the quarterback...
He seems to be saying that it's for everybody.
If you're the quarterback, that's generally the expectation.
Now, what people say and what people do are frequently very different things.
So, fair.
I'm sure there's somebody trolling the internet trying to find him.
everybody has a different personality type, and your job as a manager, Keane, is to realise what other people's personality types are and adapt to that.
Mick's just done his leadership course.
No, it was actually a couple of years ago, Ger. I have unfortunately failed to remember how to judge other people's personality types, but I do remember the theory.
You were asking about Russell Wilson and whether or not he might be trade-worthy. Like, the Bengals season is over.
Mm-hmm.
They have brilliant attackers who they're spending a lot of money on. Can he at least manage to throw the ball to Ja'Marr Chase?
I mean, I'd say he'd be better than Jake Browning, although Ja'Marr Chase can't really blame Jake Browning this week since he had a fumble of his own after a big catch. Yes, I think because he's cheap, like we talked about this with Kirk Cousins, and we knew the Bengals wouldn't do that because they don't like spending money, but I'm pretty sure what Russell Wilson's on a one-year deal, maybe it's like 8, 9 million or whatever it is, like they can absorb that and take that in.
Kirk Cousins still on 33 million a year.
Something mental. And it's, you know the way those contracts work as well. If you've got 3 years, it's got to collapse into one and all that kind of stuff. But also, that he came on last week because the Falcons were terrible and the coach was asked, is he going to be given a chance to start? And it was a straight answer of nope, and move on. So there's definitely no chance of him being at Atlanta. So I think Wilson, you're not going to bring him in and be like, oh, we're going to make the playoffs or we're going to be great or whatever.
They're 2-1, Mick.
Yeah, but it does keep the regular season interest going for a while, I think, if you swap him in. And it does mean, like, I know this is a boring thing to talk about, people will keep going to the stadium, I reckon. Whereas with Jake Browning, I think over the next month or so, that thing's just going to go slower and slower and slower and get worse and worse.
Cousins cap hit for 2026 season. This is the 2026 season, right?
Yep.
Mm.
Do you want to know what it is? $57.5 million. $25 million nice. In dead money
how
for that year.
How many teams
get
themselves into these situations? Like
if he had been released post.
Well, weirdly enough, the Falcons had this as the plan because remember they signed him and then they draft Phoenix at the same time. So everything's working as it's supposed to.
Are there better backup quarterbacks? I think Cousins being one of them, but probably too expensive.
Mac Jones.
Than Wilson. I was going to say Mac Jones. Like if Purdy is back, Mac Jones, like he is in that kind of Darnold situation of, you know, he was highly touted. His first year he made the playoffs with the Patriots and looked like if there was improvement there, he could be a good quarterback. And the improvement didn't come. In fact, there was massive disimprovement. And as so often with quarterbacks, that's it. If you look at him for the last couple of weeks, nothing spectacular.
No screw-ups, which was his issue.
So could you put him in, you give him the job for the rest of the season and see what he's made of? It's a no-lose situation, really. You get someone like that. Now, if the 49ers would trade him, but I think they probably would for a starting, for like the price of a starting quarterback with draft picks. I think they'd probably they'd give it up. You know?
I think he's probably more one looking forward to free agency next year. Now, if there's like a team like the Raiders, for example, who don't look like they're going to be as good as I thought they're going to be, and if Geno Smith's on his way out, they're going to be looking in the free agent pile. Him and Marcus Mariota is the other one to me, who I was always very high on.
I
always liked Mariota.
I didn't. I was literally going to pick up whatever defense was played against him last week, and I'm delighted I didn't because he was amazing.
Yeah. And he's only 31. So, like, he could be that. I know Kurt Warner's obviously the obvious example everyone goes to. But there are generally quarterbacks. Geno's one.
Geno,
when we just talked about, like, once you hit that 32, 33 years of age and you're like, okay, I've started for a while.
Yeah.
I've gone down the bench for a while. I know I understand everything. I'm at ease now. Now, and that actually comes back to what we were talking about with Joe Burrow, because one of the knocks on him in Tennessee was he was too quiet and didn't be a leader and all that kind of stuff.
Can I ask a question that's going to sound crazier than it actually is?
I love these.
Where's James Winston?
James Winston started, he didn't start. He is in New York, I believe.
Which New York?
The Giants. So they carry three quarterbacks, so, I think. He's the third quarterback there. So that's also
the Bengals should get Jameis Winston. Because here's the thing. 50 touchdowns, 50 interceptions. You're thrown into Chase and Higgins. Yeah. Like, you've got as good weapons as you got. You've got speed. You've got everything. Jameis Winston, like, he is not what he was supposed to be.
Yeah.
But he could cause a bit of... He could win you a few games in Cincinnati.
He'll be your backup to the kid, though.
Browning?
Yeah. No, he'll be your backup in... So Jackson Dart's starting for the Giants?
Yes.
And James Wilson's going to be your backup when you get rid of...
Rid of Russell.
Well, maybe you keep Russell for a year and say you're backup. You'll
find a deal for Russell, but...
James also seems to be living his best life as a backup because he's constantly getting these social media clips of him just having a great time. I'm not sure he cares if he starts anymore at the stitch.
Yeah, that's not... The Browns obviously have like 12 quarterbacks in their roster.
Yeah,
they're really good.
Although Joe Flacco's a big winner this week. Which is a game worth talking about because we've got Micah Parsons' Cowboys return coming up this weekend.
The Cowboys' defense is horrific.
Horrendous.
And
to a degree that I haven't seen in a while.
Well, is the Bears not nearly as bad?
Well,
it turns out not.
I suppose you have to. You can't really judge them when they're playing against that Cowboys offense and CeeDee Lamb's injured. It's because that's basically their whole offense. So it's a hard one. So like last week, obviously, the Bears had a great time, you know.
I'm just realizing that has a knock-on impact on my dynasty
this
team.
This is the challenge I have in this podcast. They're always just waiting for their fantasy team to come up.
I forgot about that.
This whole podcast is a racket.
I'm trying to trade back before the end of the show, and Mick can alert the group. Anyway,
I'm already texting. The phone under the table.
Yeah.
Lions, Ravens. So you want to talk about Green Bay? Like, that's very disappointing for them.
Lions, Ravens is simple. Look, the Ravens had their best run, Suffers injured, so the Lions were able to run the ball really easily, and Goff threw the ball well. Never mind that.
Bigger win for the Lions than it was a loss for the Ravens, though, I think. Like, the Lions we talked about last week in a kind of you don't need to be as worried about them as maybe we thought after the first game. I think that's re-emphasized in a big way after that performance on Monday night. Like, the Lions are a genuine contender in the way that we shouldn't have been overlooking them, but we probably did read a lot into the coordinators. It was you, but like, but I think there was a general sense. I don't think it's that you know they've lost a lot of the coordinators, and maybe they've lost a little bit of the sheen
that they
didn't get over the line last year when they didn't need to. But Hutchinson's back and looks at his, sorry, don't know why I cursed there, that was a bit random, but looks at his best again. And he wasn't there all last year, you know? Who's to say they wouldn't have won the Super Bowl with him?
Yeah.
Well, I think the Ravens, and you mentioned it's not as big of a deal for the Ravens, they look good on offense. It's just defensively they couldn't stop David Montgomery.
And the thing is, right?
Of all people.
We've seen teams work that stuff out over a period of time. Like, if the coaching staff is as clever as we think they are at the Ravens, they can afford to lose a few of these games. They're now not going to go 13-3 or whatever the number is.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a stretch during, like, not peak Patriots years, but like second triple or whatever you call
second
it.
Second dynasty.
Yeah, where like the defense every single year was just horrendous for the first month, and Belichick just worked it into a position of being like, oh, now it's a top five defense with the same guys.
Often poor all the way through, and what would happen was in-game adjustments, which, you know, and it's some often in the same game it would change, but yeah, it was regularly not elite. But on the Green Bay thing, it was one of those weeks, I think, as opposed to a big problem. And we have to actually genuinely take the Cleveland defense seriously.
They look like
what is Myles Garrett doing signing? All right, he just took the money. He's happy enough to fade into obscurity. I don't know. Like, that's as good a defense as there probably is in the NFL.
That was the whole story of that game. That defensive line was just destroying the offensive line of the Packers. And we talked about this previously, I think in week one, we were saying the Packers' offensive line gave Jordan Love all the time and space in the world that he needed, and he was able to throw the ball deep. I'm not sure they had a single deep attempt in this game, even, because every time Jordan Love got to the top of his drop, he had three guys around him. It was like, okay, no, we have to do this short passing game. And because he's got a bunch of young receivers, these guys don't know how to do that yet. They're freakishly talented. Like, Matthew Golden's been brilliant. But like, what they want to do is run past the guy, use their speed, get downfield, catch a big ball and run in the end zone. They don't want to be thinking about, oh, I've got to get this timing to be in this spot right here. I've got to make sure I release this way so the quarterback has the option to get me the ball this quickly. And they just don't do that yet. And they made a bunch of different stupid mistakes throughout the game as well. That all comes back to that pressure that the Browns defense created.
Michael Parsons good at football still.
He's just ruining everyone every single week. This whole back injury thing, it seems to have, it's either healed up or it was never as bad as so suggested. And I would be very, very concerned if I was a Cowboys fan this week, because that could easily be a 40 or 50 point game, because the Browns defensive line we just talked about, go to the Cowboys defensive line. They don't have any of that at all.
All right, anything else you want to talk about?
It'd be nice if my team didn't have five turnovers in a game where they're generally playing well.
They've a kid playing quarterback, though, still. Like, he's very young, you know.
I was going to kill him for that red zone interception until I saw it was tipped.
It was, No, fair enough. And he kind of walked into the fumble late on, but it was more Ramondre Stevens. We talked about him last week he had two, and he's been, the reason he hasn't been the running back they hoped he was is because of fumbles. He has the game of his career last week against the Dolphins, and then fumbles twice, including in the end zone, and just tough. But I just said that in a completely self-indulgent way. Nick Bosa we shouldn't pass on the thing. Like, this is an utter disaster. This team is absolutely cursed when it comes to injuries, but also I think the NFL is robbed by not having Nick Bosa for
and he looked good before the injury.
It's his third ACL. So
is it? I thought it was second. Wow.
It's his second as professional. He did one in high school as well.
Right, okay.
So, and I think you could see he was like fingers down straight away. They're 3-0.
Yes.
Worst 3-0 team I've ever seen. But they have loads of players still to come back. Now, obviously, they won't get Bosa back. Maybe you trade Mac Jones for Trey Hendricks or something. Hey.
That wouldn't be crazy, because Trey Hendrickson wants out there too.
He does, like,
Crazy enough, might be an issue. Like.
Well, I'm going to say it'd be Mac Jones plus something else rather than just Mac Jones.
Would it though? Did he sign a new deal?
Re-up, wasn't it? Yeah.
So maybe it would be.
But you don't have Mac Jones under contract. Anyway, so look, we'll we can manifest that. But that, and I suppose the teams who are 0-3, there's a parade of shit teams. I thought they weren't going to be terrible, but there are.
Like Tennessee, I think, are worse than people thought they were. The Dolphins played well against Buffalo, but are obviously... Well, that was the McDaniel save his job game, but I don't know if they have actually anything better than that.
The Texans are the most interesting one, because CJ Stroud was meant to be superstar quarterback. He doesn't look like superstar quarterback anymore, and the defense there was meant to be this incredible thing that D'Amico Ryans was putting together, and that does not look like that at all either.
And they play the Titans this week, and the Dolphins play the Jets, so it's loads of terrible games. Oh, any one of which could have been like what the game that we're getting, and we're like,
absolutely,
teams with winning records.
The Titans have hit that emergency red button of the head coach is no longer calling the plays. And it's like, oh, that's that sign you do when there's 3 weeks left in your job before you get fired.
Yeah,
it's very early, isn't it?
It doesn't seem to be the greatest coach in the world. If we're mentioning surprise 0-3 teams, and you mentioned the 49ers being a poor 3-0 team, the Indianapolis Colts have been the story of the season so far. Like,
I can't believe it's lasted this long. Never mind. I just don't believe in it.
But so far, so good. Yes, you know, and Jonathan Taylor looks like he's... you know, I think people forgot about Jonathan Taylor rather than him being any worse than he was before.
He was injured. He had a parade of injuries.
Yeah, but also Daniel Jones, he's not going to be elite, right? But he had moments in New York and he had injuries. And he's not injured at the moment and he's in a new situation. And the Giants has been a bit of a toxic place for a few years as well. And he's gone there and you have to give him credit. Like, he's done brilliant.
You do. And the thing with him that was always the issue beyond the injuries and like the fact that it was New York and the spotlight and all that kind of stuff, he always played scared. He always took the easy option. He always went for the safe throw. And he's not doing that in Indianapolis right now. He's actually hitting some impressive deep balls, which he's never did. He didn't even do that in college, which is why when he was drafted in the first round, everyone was like, what the hell are you doing? You're drafting a guy who can't throw the ball further than 10 yards downfield.
Yeah.
But now he's doing that. So sometimes it just you have this perfect mix of players, coach, and that's what I think it is. They've caught lightning in a bottle. Maybe it'll last for a full season. Maybe it'll last for 6 weeks. I don't know. Personally, I'm very skeptical, and I will be for a while. But that's
fair enough, and we probably should be. But I think another thing that's probably not talked about is that they've got a really—he's got a lot of receiver options. Probably like Michael Pittman is not Justin Jefferson. He's not like the best number one in the league, but they probably have the best number five in the league.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And they go down. They've got a really good new tight end who have got in both leagues, and you know. So when you're a quarterback that's like, you know, high on confidence, but maybe not the highest on talent, but suddenly you've got six people to throw it to on every throw, or five people, obviously. You couldn't have six people. That'd be illegal.
I wanted to check who their fifth wide receiver is. And we're talking wide receivers, not receivers as a whole. Ashton Doolin, who's actually pretty damn good. So that's a fair call.
Right. Anything else you want to get off your chest?
Sunday.
Who knew we'd be talking about Ashton Doolin?
You're going as a fanger.
Yeah. Yeah.
With your 49ers jersey.
I know. That would be...
49ers balaclava?
That wasn't a 49ers balaclava.
I think 49ers
wasn't off
the
ball balaclava. It was off the ball red, which unfortunately is similar to some other reds that have been co-opted in recent years. But enough about that. We'll see you next week, folks. Take care.